In re estate of Gable. Matter number A-17-1248. Like everybody's already set. Before we commence with oral argument, we have a late stipulation here as it relates to substituting James Gable in light of his death. And I just want to take it up with counsel before we get started here. Is everybody in agreement that all parties have stipulated to this substitution? Does anybody object to that as it relates to moving forward with oral arguments today?
No stipulated.
Anyone? Okay. Very well.
Ready to proceed?
We are.
My name is Nicole Sekman-Jillick. I represent Jolene Jeffries, Jack Gable, Joyce Gable, Judy McMeekin, and Jane Hill. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, which is going to be handled by my colleague, Robert Schartz. This involved a jury trial of a will contest where my clients were proponents of a 2014 will, and the opponents and the contestants of this 2014 will was James Gable and his sister, Jerry Wickert. So Charles Gable had 7 children. All 7 children were involved in either as proponents or opponents of this will. The issues at trial involved a lot of evidence that my clients contest should not have been received into evidence. Some of this evidence was highly prejudicial. The Nebraska standard for evidence that is considered at a will contest is information about the testator's state of mind shortly before the signing or the execution of that testamentary document, at the time of the execution of that testamentary document, and shortly thereafter. I'm not aware of any Nebraska cases defining what shortly thereafter means and what evidence taking place after the signing of a testamentary document that can be considered. In this particular case, Charles Gable signed the 2014 will on December 3rd of 2014. And the evidence showed that prior to that time, he had been living with his daughter Jolene, and he previously had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2012. However, Charles, regardless of that diagnosis, was able to function and had testamentary capacity on December 3rd, 2014. Charles had engaged his own attorneys to prepare and draft this new will. It wasn't something done overnight. He had met with his attorneys from Erickson Cederstrom several times to discuss these will changes. Due to the animosity in the family, even at the time of this will signing, other attorneys other than the law firm of Erickson Cederstrom handled the actual will execution. It was handled by attorneys at Carlson and Burnett Law Firm. At trial, there was either in-person or deposition testimony from 7 attorneys who had contact with Charles either at the will signing or shortly before, all stating that he had testamentary capacity. Some of the evidence that was admitted that we believe should not have been admitted that was highly prejudicial was evidence from Charles' state of mind and mental and health condition several months after the will signing. As I said, in December of 2014, Charles was living with his daughter Jolene. On March 30th, 2015, Jolene was unable to continue to work from home and had to get a job outside of the home, and Charles went to live at an assisted living facility. Once he moved to the assisted living facility, his condition and his capacity did decline. Several expert witnesses were called in this, including Dr. Hoffnung, which was called on behalf of James Gable, and Dr. Hudson, which was called on behalf of my 5 clients. Both Dr. Hoffnung and Dr. Hudson all agree that when a person who has dementia is removed from their familiar surroundings, their condition declines more rapidly. So in this particular situation, we believe that on March 30th of 2015, when Charles was removed from Jolene's home, go to live at the assisted living facility, that's when his condition started to decline rapidly. And documents from his living at the assisted living facility and thereafter should have been excluded pursuant to our motion in limine, or should have been
Wasn't the testimony of the experts, though, that it was that looking at a long-term a longer-term period was important to their opinions?
Dr. Hoffman did testify that she thought that that was important to her statement. But despite her opinion of what's important and what's not, Nebraska law dictates you have to look at what's shortly thereafter. And something that has, from several months thereafter, after a tremendous change in circumstances, we believe should not be considered, and it was abuse of discretion to allow that into evidence. And the evidence supported that there was a huge change in Charles. Once he left Jolene's house, he began to wander. He ended up assaulting another resident at the assisted living facility. He was placed into a psychiatric hospital at Emmanuel. He later had to go to a locked memory care center. Those were not the circumstances that those who did have contact with Charles on the day of the will signing talked about. Sam Moyer was...
Is that what the expert relied on? Her opinion was all of those events that happened after?
Yes, some of the information she relied on were those events that took place well after he had moved from Jolene's home and after this tremendous change in circumstance. Sam Moyer was a banker and a lawyer who had known Charles for a long time. He was present at the will signing on December 3rd of 2014. Prior to this will execution, Charles had a conservator, agreed upon conservator appointed, had appointed a new trustee of his trust. And and Heritage Bank was appointed conservator and trustee of the trust. Sam Moyer, bank president, was the point person for handling all that. He was one of the four people present at the actual will signing, which Jolene and all of the family members were not present at the will signing. But Mr. Moyer testified and even created a document that was received into evidence about all the things that Charles knew that established he had testamentary capacity. So on those grounds, we believe that, number one, the trial court should have ruled in favor of the directed verdict, should have ruled in favor of the motion for J&OV, and should have ruled in favor for the new trial, just because all this evidence that did come in, should not have come in, was highly prejudicial and influenced the jury. There was also several other small pieces of evidence that should not have come in as well, including evidence of prior wills, prior estate plans, some which have even, in closing arguments, counsel for James Gable said, well, if the jury here decides to throw out the 2014 will, then at some point another jury might get to consider the 2012 will or 2008 will. Those things had been excluded pursuant to a motion in limine, yet they were brought up, and those things were, again, highly prejudicial. On those grounds, you know,
There was no objection during that closing argument, was there?
There was a sidebar. That there was an objection made at that sidebar. There is no recording of that sidebar conference. And
Was a recording requested?
Recording was requested for all of the trial, the entire trial, Your Honor.
But at the sidebar, was recording requested?
I don't believe there was any specific request for that specific sidebar, but there was a request to record all sidebars or all the whole trial testimony. I know I'm in my rebuttal time, and I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Justices. May it please the Court. My name is Minya Herian, and I represent the appellee. And as you correctly pointed out, that was James Gable previously, and now it's the personal representative for his estate. We ask that the trial court's verdict be affirmed in its entirety with respect to both the claim for lack of testamentary capacity and undue influence. I'd like to address, obviously, some of the issues that were raised by the appellees. One of them is this issue regarding testamentary capacity and that evidence relating to the medical records that were dated sometime after the will execution should not have been admitted. I'd like to point out to the court that this was not the only evidence that was relied upon by the neuropsychologists that were testifying at trial. When Dr. Hoffnung testified, she stated that she reviewed the records from Dr. Sidak, who was the physician for Charles. And those records dated back to 2012 when he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. He performed multiple MMSEs, or mini mental exams, where he was scored based on his performance. Then 7 months prior to the rule execution 2014, Dr. Callahan, who also testified at trial, performed a neuropsychological assessment of Charles, which Dr. Sidak had referred him to do that. And based on Dr. Callahan's assessment, he also testified to the what you point out was the known rate of decline, and Dr. Hoffnung also testified to this known pattern. And basically what they said is that Alzheimer's progresses in a certain pattern, so that while everybody agrees that testamentary capacity, the key is really what it was on December 3rd, 2014, evidence of that person's abilities long before and shortly thereafter is still relevant to identify what it was on December 3rd, 2014. Both Dr. Callahan and to even a greater extent Dr. Hoffnung testified that knowing the whole scope of the medical records from before and after helped her determine what this condition, what Charles's condition was on December 3rd, 2014, and she concluded that he lacked testamentary capacity. And what the trial court exercised discretion, because as part of the motion in limine, counsel wanted to draw an arbitrary line. Well, the will was executed on December 3rd, 2014, and anything dating after January 1, 2015 may not be admitted without any reason or tying it to anything of relevance why that was this arbitrarily chosen date. And so the court instead focused on what does the neuropsychologist believe that is relevant to them in order to determine whether somebody has testamentary capacity. And they stated that this evidence that they was data afterwards, which was obviously there was a big decline towards the end of his life in Charles, but everybody was able to question the witnesses. Dr. Hudson, the expert witness for the Gable 5, similarly testified that being removed from one's familiar environment can lead to a decline. And Dr. Hoffnung admitted to the same. So the jury was presented with this evidence that, you know, part of the reason that you might have seen this sharp decline later on was due to him being changed and moved out of his familiar environment and moving into a healthcare facility and then to the psychiatric unit and then after that to a long-term memory unit. But this evidence was presented to the jury, and they were able to evaluate it and listen to the experts as far as what their testimony is. The other thing I'd like to address was the statement that seven attorneys had met with Charles. What I would like to point out as part of the, in order to show that somebody had testamentary capacity, the testator has to know the extent of his property. That is one of the elements. None of the attorneys that had met with Charles, either on December 3rd, 2014, or any times prior to that that had met with him for other legal matters, none of them had asked him if he knew what his property was, or certainly not what the extent of that property was. They knew to some extent that he owned farmland, but there was really no testimony that anybody had verified to see if he met this. The other thing I would say that some of the testimony, what counsel talked about was also Mr. Moyer, and that he, again, on December 3rd, asked questions to determine whether Charles had testamentary capacity. Mr. Moyer also did not ever ask him about his assets, so that was never presented. And then the other thing I'd like to point out is with respect to the claim of undue influence, which I know it was not really addressed, but I realize there's some rebuttal time, so I would like to address it. There has been ample evidence of undue influence as well. As you know, and as the case law establishes, undue influence can be difficult to show through direct evidence, because a lot of the times the person that's being unduly influenced is sort of isolated, and that is in part what leads to this undue influence. So the facts and circumstances surrounding that, such as the person's prior life and how they acted, their character and their mental condition are key. So Dr. Hoffnung obviously could not say Charles was unduly influenced because that is a factual question that the jury determined. What she could testify to is that due to Charles' decline in his cognitive functioning, he was more susceptible to undue influence. She testified that she sees people that are elderly that have dementia and in particular Alzheimer's where they rely on other people, and they, because of their Alzheimer's, they have no way of verifying whether the information provided to them is accurate, and they have to rely on that person. And typically, they also rely on that person for food and shelter and help with health and medical decisions, so that they're really at this in this situation, much like Charles was, where they're really reliant on a person. And as a result of that, she said that he was more susceptible to undue influence. Prior to Charles moving in with Jolene, James Gable had seen his father every single day. They had farmed together for dozens of years. Charles was upset after his wife died in 2007. He was approached by two of his daughters, two of the Gable Five, and they were asking, well, now that mom has passed away, what's going to happen to our inheritance? And Charles got very angry about that. And that's when he approached James and said that he wants to make sure that James, that's when he executed the statement of intent and wanted to allow James to buy land at assessed value and wanted to give him some options so that he could continue to farm the land. And that's when he executed a statement of intent and said that, basically, I am intentionally treating Jim more favorably for James because I would not have what I have today. I would not have this big farming operation if it wasn't for his assistance. So they were very close. They worked closely together. There's never been any arguments, like real arguments about finances. Nobody came forward and said that they were arguing about this, not Jerry, not James. And frankly, the other siblings just weren't around because James is the one that farmed with his father. And what changed is, and what the jury was able to listen to, is this difference from when Charles farmed with James and they worked together on every single day, to Jolene coming in on July 26, I believe, 2013, taking him to his attorney, changing the successor trustee, which has always been James, changing the healthcare power of attorney, going to the bank, changing everything over, and then he goes to live with her, and now Charles, James has no knowledge of how Charles is doing. She's keeping him separate. She, at the facilities when he goes, when Charles moves eventually to a facility, she doesn't tell James that Charles has moved. She did not keep anybody updated about the health conditions. In fact, there was posters at the facility saying that no family members can visit, and talking about James, that he is basically a physical threat, and that Jerry should not be allowed, that she causes anxiety to Charles. So there was ample evidence where a jury could reasonably infer from that, all of that circumstantial evidence, that there was a huge dichotomy between what happened until Jolene came in, which was, again, about 2 years after he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and there were these mental exams showed that there was cognitive decline, and Dr. Callahan, who again performed the assessment 7 months prior to the execution, said that there were quite severe cognitive defects, and he referred, he stated that a testamentary capacity evaluation should be performed, but none was ever done, even though everybody agrees that there would be some issues with, you know, a dispute about the will execution, yet none was done. And Dr. Callahan testified that in many different parts of the assessment, Charles performed at the first percentile, meaning out of 100 people, if you put him from lowest to highest, he performed below the one percentile in various categories. So you could not perform worse. And for instance, this type of evidence predated, you know, this arbitrary January 1, 2015 cutoff that opposing counsel believes should have been imposed on the medical evidence. So to say that there's nothing prior to the will execution that indicated that there was severe decline in Charles is incorrect. But that decline obviously continued, and I see I'm out of time, so okay. Unless there's any questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
How much time do we have for rebuttal?
May it please the court. My name is Rob Sharks. I represent who have affectionately been known as the Gable Five. First of all, Callahan never did a testamentary capacity evaluation. He said that his evaluation, in fact, was not a testamentary capacity evaluation, and he could not testify as to the testamentary capacity of Charles in December of 2014 when he signed his will, period, end of story. Hoffnung basically extrapolates from a point in time where there's an MMSE, a mini mental status evaluation, that Charles scored 19 on, which is well above testamentary capacity. Then she uses the information that she gains from after his signing and into 2015, and she tries to draw 2 points in time and tries to put December 3, 2014 somewhere in that trajectory and guess at what his status was on that day.
Well, was the mental capacity examination done around December 4th? It sounds like 7 lawyers are looking at him, but no medical
exactly.
people?
Every single attorney that asked him a question was doing a testamentary capacity evaluation. Every single person that was saying to him, Charles, do you know what you're doing today? He knew he was at an attorney's office to sign his will that he had been working on for well over several months with 3 other attorneys. He was ticked off at Jim because he found out, Charles found out, that Jim had defaulted on a bunch of loans. He was ruining the Gable name in the Osceola area. And when Charles found that out, he was upset. He wanted Jim out of his operations. He wanted Jim out of his will. Period. End of story.
And I understand that. And I'm asking specifically, did any medical person around December 4th actually do a testimony?
Short time before that, the MMSE showed 19. Then the individuals who knew him, Erickson Cederstrom attorneys who knew him, they were the ones that evaluated his testamentary capacity, and he knew the 4 things that legally he needed to know. He didn't need to know every detail of his property. He needed to know generally what he did and what he owned. He knew he owned farm ground. He knew he was a farmer. He had grain. He had equipment. He knew he had land. He knew the bounty of his object. He knew that he had kids. He wanted Jim out. He was providing for his other kids, and that was all in the will. So this notion that there was evidence somehow to support that there was no testamentary capacity. There was no evidence refuting that on December 3, 2014, he had testamentary capacity.
Well, Dr. Huffman, correct?
No, she doesn't say that she knows for any reasonable circumstance. She's guessing. She's using circumstantial evidence of his dramatic decline. And we didn't arbitrarily say, oh, pick January 1, 2015. We said, pick a date sometime after he signs the will, but before he's removed from Jolene's house. Because once he's removed from Jolene's house, he goes off a cliff. And all of the medical testimony is he goes off a cliff. So to sit there and to compare when he falls off the cliff and he hits ground below, compare that point in time to the 19 that he had shortened time before he signed his will, is absolutely prejudicial to us, and it's unfair. It led the jury to believe that this was a straight line course from 19 down to the bottom of the gully. Because when he goes off the cliff, he goes fast. I mean, he's wandering, he assaults another patient, he doesn't know, his surroundings aren't familiar. He doesn't know where the bathroom is, he doesn't know where his bed is. Everything's been changed. So,
okay, I think that's all the time we have.
Yeah, if I can just, Your Honor, we'd ask you to reverse and remand this and grant our directed verdict and or in the alternative grant the JNOV or in the alternative grant a new trial.
Okay.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Parties are excused. The matter is submitted. Thank you.